The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello, I'm Kiran Kapoor, and welcome to episode 2 of the Cambridge Marketing Podcast. This week, two different career routes in marketing. We'll talk apprenticeships with Charlotte Lestienne.
The beauty of the apprenticeship, so you can start your career with an apprenticeship, and you can also be working in a company for a long time, so it's for anybody at any time.
And interim management with Nick Wake.
You are being paid to bring that fresh perspective. The client's got all sorts of stuff going on. They can find it difficult to see the wood from the trees, and you just come in and you can just say it how you see it.
That's all coming up in the next 30 minutes on the Cambridge Marketing Podcast.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College.
So I'm joined by Charlotte Lestienne, who is the apprentice lead at Cambridge Marketing College. Charlotte, welcome to the show. We all have an idea of apprenticeships as being sort of car mechanics and bricklayers and beauticians, and we sort of understand how that works. But marketing apprentices, so when did they start?
That's a good question. In fact, the government was very concerned that the old style apprenticeship were no longer suitable to train a modern force. And also, they wanted to open apprenticeships to older workers or to higher levels. So it was a good surprise to us. They came alive between 2 years and 18 months ago. So in September, October 2018. And because we were a marketing college, we have been delivering marketing qualification for all our time. It was very easy for us to jump on this new market and to be able to deliver the marketing apprenticeships.
Now, looking at apprenticeships, I can see that there are quite a lot of different apprenticeships, and you sometimes see them described as having different levels. So there's a level 2 and a level 3, and I think they go right up to level 7. What is a level of apprenticeship?
So the level means the level of the apprenticeship. So for example, level 2 is a GCSE level. Level 3 is A level. Level 4 is first year on university. And level 6 could be bachelor or master level.
In order to take us a different level, would you have to have academic qualifications, or does experience count?
It's a mixture of both. Yes, you need to have the qualification. You need to have your GCSE to do a level 2 or A level to do a level 3. But obviously, yes, the experience counts too. And we assess the apprentice before they can start. So we are sure this is the right level for them.
So that implies, if you can go right up to level 7, that apprenticeships aren't necessarily just for young people, which I think most of us tend to assume they are.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the apprenticeship. So you can start your career with an apprenticeship, and that's very fine. And you can also be working in a company for a long time or wanting to return to work after pregnancy or anything, and you can also start an apprenticeship. So it's for anybody at any time.
That sounds really great. So if somebody listening to this thought, wow, I'd like to be a marketing apprentice, how would they go about becoming one?
So if you are an individual, so that you want to start an apprenticeship, there are two cases. Either you are unemployed, and you can you need to find an organization who are willing to put you in an apprenticeship. And there is a national website called Find an Apprenticeship, and where everybody can search and apply for an apprenticeship. And if you're employed, I think the best way is to speak to your line manager or to your HR department and to see if they're happy for you to do so. But because it's new and it's a nice way to upskill, it's a very good solution for you.
So if an employer thinks either, oh, I'd like an apprentice, or one of their members of staff comes to them and says, I'd quite like to be an apprentice here, where would the employer start?
So you need to choose first which apprenticeship is the best for the candidate you have in mind. So because there are a lot of different apprenticeships, so you need to find the right one. And you need to find a training provider, and we are going to start to work with you.
Okay, so and a training provider obviously provides the training. The employer has the apprentice, and the employer, as you've already said, has to release the apprentice for 20% of their time. So the next question is always going to be for an employer: how much is this going to cost?
So that's a very good question, and that's again the beauty of the apprenticeship, because they're nearly free for the company. Because if we are speaking about large company, so more than who has a pay bill over £3 million, they pay the levy, and if they pay the levy, it's paid by the levy, so you don't have to pay anything else. And on the other way, if you don't use a levy, you lose it. So you have all the benefits to use it when you can. And if you have a smaller company, so if you don't pay the levy, the government pay 95% of the fees. So you only have to pay 5%. So either way, either you are a big company or a small company, it's very beneficial for the company.
So if I've understood that correctly, so if I'm a large company, I've got a wage bill of over £3 million a year, I'm called a levy paying company, in which case I'm already paying the money, so I might as well use it. And if I'm a small company, then I can apply for the government to fund the apprenticeship, and they will fund it up to 95%.
Exactly.
And so the only additional cost of that will be actually paying the apprentice, so I've also got to pay them a wage.
Yes, yes, that's it. Yeah,
that's great. So is this international, or do the apprentices have to be in the UK?
Oh, it's even more complicated than that. They need to be in England. We need to have the evidence that the apprentice will spend 50% of their working hours based in England. So we can't help, for example, if they're in Wales or in Scotland.
OK. And tell me, what type of industries have marketing and PR apprenticeships?
Oh, all of them. We work with public sectors. So we work, for example, with a county and borough councils like Suffolk, Cambridge, Sandwell, etc. We work with the NHS. We also work with the UK Atomic Energy Authority or East Sussex Fire Rescue Service. But we also work for charities like English Heritage or Woodland Trust. And obviously the private sector. So we work for a range of sectors like industrial, healthcare, food, sport, all of them. So for example, Henkel, P&O, Saint-Gobain, Zoo Paington, Sage, Healthcare at Home, a lot of organization. And we have just started a new program for professional services firm, and we are very excited about it. So now we work also with, for example, Clifford Chance or Towers and Hamlins.
So it really is quite a range of industries there. So we can imagine that a car mechanic apprentice, they would traditionally do one day at college and then the rest of the week they would be learning on the job. So how does it work for marketing and PR apprentices?
So that's a good question. So maybe I need to explain that when you do an apprenticeship, you need to have 20% of your time dedicated to your study. So if you have a full-time job, it means one day a week. So because marketing departments are always very busy with some fairs, some events, some campaigns, it's very difficult to have one specific day dedicated to your study. So we chose to have a delivery which could be flexible, eco-friendly, and which was a 21st century delivery. So we deliver our apprentices online. So we have an online learning zone dedicated to our apprenticeships. And we also have some tutorial with an expert tutor once a month, and also some webinars and a Slack channel, so they can have a peer-to-peer engagement, even if they work from the workplace.
And lastly, we've mentioned that they're marketing and PR apprentices. So how many apprenticeships are there in marketing and PR?
So we deliver 3 marketing apprenticeships, so from all the levels, so level 3, level 4 and level 6. So marketing assistant, marketing executive and marketing manager. But we also deliver the PR and communication assistant apprenticeship and the junior content producer apprenticeship. And this one is also called creative content assistant.
So, Charlotte, this is my last question, but I'm fascinated. You mentioned that there was a junior content producer. So, apprenticeship, what's a content producer?
So, a junior content producer is a level 3 apprenticeship. It's also called creative content assistant, and it's about creating content that can be used across a variety of media, so from digital, social media, print, etc. So the learning is about content planning, content development, content creation, and content evaluation.
Sounds fantastic. Charlotte Lestienne, thank you so much for coming on the show and explaining about the new type of apprenticeships and how they apply to marketing and PR.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Charlotte. And if you want to find out more, you can go to apprenticeships.gov.uk and follow the links.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.
And now we go from apprenticeships to interim management. My next guest on the podcast is Nick Wake, owner and founder of Awaken Communications, long-term college tutor, and also an expert interim manager. Nick, welcome. My first question has to be, what on earth is an interim manager?
Yes, that's a great question. What is an interim? So an interim is somebody who goes into an organisation for a specified period of time to do a particular job. So it's very different from a permanent employee. You are not going to be there forever. You're going to be there for a period of time, and the client has a very specific problem that they are looking for you to solve during that period of time.
So does that mean you could be asked to be an interim manager for, when I was thinking about this, I thought perhaps maternity leave cover, but could it also be that they want to launch a product, so they want an interim marketing manager to come in and help with that?
Both of those examples are very relevant. It could indeed be for a maternity cover. So that's obviously someone leaving the organisation while they have a child, and you're going in basically to keep the ship sailing, to take over their responsibilities and ensure that nothing gets dropped. It could also be that the company is in a particular phase of growth, perhaps the early phase of growth, and they need an extra pair of hands to come in and take care of an element of the growth program, once again to ensure that things keep moving to timetable.
So perhaps we could be a bit quite specific about some of the interim that you've done, because I know you've done some very interesting companies.
Yes, I have. Yeah. I've done three, what I'd call now three significant assignments. The first one was for iFly Indoor Skydiving. The second one was for Oakman Inns, a pub restaurant company in the home counties. And the third one was for Silverstone. I think everybody knows Silverstone, the home of the British Grand Prix. And interestingly, yes, they were all for different briefs and for different periods of time. Interestingly, the iFly one, the time I was working for iFly varied between 2 to 4 days a week, but the actual engagement ended up being for around about 6 years. And during that period, there was discussion of me actually joining the company, but in the end, I decided that I was happier being self-employed, and that's how that panned out. The other two assignments were for, each of them was for a period of a year. iFly Indoor Skydiving was very much about helping the organization grow. At the time, they were not a business that could afford to pay for a full-time marketing director. So I started, I think, on 2.5 days a week. The Oakman Inns assignment was very much about bringing some structure and process to a young and inexperienced marketing team. And the Silverstone assignment was to bring some specific marketing communications expertise and team management in a period where the organisation had gone through quite a lot of change.
Gosh, they all sound really fascinating. I'm sort of struggling to know which one to ask about. Is there something that one of those that you're particularly proud of?
To be honest with you, Kieran, I'm proud of all three. I feel I made a difference at all three businesses, and they worked both for the client and for me. Huge benefits to be had on both sides. I recently wrote a blog about how to be an effective interim, and in that blog I quoted an example at iFly where one of the things that I'm most proud of is stopping the charging of a £1 non-returnable fee to customers for using lockers when they came to visit. Might seem quite sort of small and incidental, but actually it is one of the things that I'm most proud of, and it was the right decision. And the reason it was the right decision was that it became quite clear to me that in this premium experience, the charging of such a small fee to look after your valuables and your belongings while you were flying in the wind tunnel was often a choice that you didn't really have, because you had to remove jewellery and obviously put your wallet somewhere if you didn't have a friend with you to hold on to it. But for an experience that was a premium experience, if something else went wrong, perhaps you were running a bit late, or the tunnel ran late, or maybe your suit didn't fit you properly, this irritant then became part of the whole problem. So it was quite clear to me that although we could see the revenue from all these locker charges, what we couldn't see was the loss in referrals, recommendations, testimonials, and repeat visits that didn't happen just because a customer was mildly irritated that we'd taken an additional £1 from them. So we stopped it, and subsequently had a record year. Now, you couldn't possibly claim that that was all down to that fact, but the point was I'm convinced that the loss of revenue from the direct charge was more than made up for in terms of those things that I mentioned earlier, repeat visits, referrals, and so on.
That's great. So you were contributing to a much nicer customer experience there. So I know in your article you talked about some advice for people that might want to be an interim manager. So can we explore that a bit? You had some ideas around giving without fear and being available.
Yeah, that would be my number one takeaway is, I don't know about you, Kieran, but when I was younger, I can remember being fearful of making a mistake, perhaps coming across as a bit naive or a bit unknowledgeable. You know, you were sat in a meeting and there was stuff being discussed and you didn't really know what they were talking about, or you didn't understand it and you're a bit too hesitant to speak up. And I really regret that now, looking back. I think that that fear probably stopped me being the best version of myself that I could be in the working environment. And the great thing about interiming is you can, you know, you are being paid to bring that fresh perspective. The client's got all sorts of stuff going on. They can find it difficult to see the wood from the trees. There's lots of day-to-day stuff that they are trying to deal with. And you just come in and you can just say it how you see it, and you can be really honest. And the worst that's going to happen is that they may not necessarily agree with your analysis. But I have to say, you know, I was never rebuked for the giving of the analysis. In fact, you know, that's exactly what they want you to do. The client wants you to come in and give that fresh perspective and give that fresh challenge and help them move their business on. So, you know, giving without fear would be, you know, my number one tip for being an effective interim. And the other thing you mentioned there was always be available. The chances are that you may not necessarily be employed for 5 days a week, might be a little bit less than that. But the important thing is the client needs to feel that you are always available. I wouldn't recommend, if you are employed 2 days a week, I wouldn't recommend you say, right, I will be working Monday and Wednesday, because that probably isn't going to work for the client. They will want to contact you at any time during that week. And indeed, it's in your own interest to make sure that you are available and not, you know, to be clocking on and clocking off, as it were. You know, the best arrangements are when, you know, the client feels that they're getting great value from you. And in order to give great value, you've got to always be available.
That's, yes, I can see that's good advice. What other tips do you have?
So other tips would be, with the experience that you've got, you've got a great opportunity to develop other members of the team in the business in which you're working. And one of the things that I'm most proud of is not necessarily the recommendations that I've had from the client who I'm directly reporting to, but some of those sort of lower down the organizational hierarchy, if you like, who I've been able to coach and pass on the benefit of my experience. And that's hugely rewarding to be able to do that. Of course, it works the other way as well. Being an interim gives you the opportunity to learn yourself, you know, from being in different environments. Every company that I've been into will use different project management tools, different content management systems, different email broadcast tools. And so you've got the opportunity to go in and learn about all these things. And that has been hugely rewarding for me. What else would I say? I would say one of the things I talk about in the blog is fix only what needs to be fixed. So when I went to work for Oakman Inns, it was quite clear to me that all the, if you like, the exciting side of the marketing challenge had already been taken care of. The business had a very clear understanding of its position in the marketplace. It was full square in the sort of premium upscale sector of the market, with beautifully fitted out buildings, serving freshly cooked food in a fun, buzzy environment with staff who were really motivated and engaged to do a terrific job. All I was engaged to bring there was a little more process and structure to ensure that activity was executed a little more accurately and on time, and that the team members were developed and given a roadmap for their future with the company. So that's exactly what I did, and it was hugely rewarding for the time that I spent there.
So we've talked quite a lot about sort of the things that you've discovered about being an interim. Can we talk about some of the downsides? Because I suspect interim management isn't for everybody.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And my view on this is that it's all about your personal context. So I fully appreciate that for many people, it might appear quite daunting, the idea of not knowing for sure when your assignment ended how long it would take before the next one started, and the thought of a temporary loss in earnings could be quite scary. So it's not going to be for everyone. All I can say is, if you reach a position in your life where you don't necessarily have that economic imperative to be earning the same amount of money month in, month out, and that you like the idea of variety, that you're confident in your own ability, then interiming can be extremely rewarding. You know, it's worked for me for for all the reasons that I've described, and has probably been the most fulfilling part of my career to date. But it started when it was right for me, and I think that's, you know, that's something that each individual needs to make their own mind up about.
So if I woke up tomorrow morning and decided that actually interim management was for me, where would I start?
So there are probably a couple of routes that you can go. The route that I found to be the most effective for me is to use your personal network. If you've been a good employee and you've developed good relationships over the years, you'll find that folk want to help you. And once they realise that you're in the market to do interim assignments, if they come across a suitable opportunity, they will refer you in. What you need to do is just keep reminding folk that you are available, and they will definitely open doors for you. The other route you can go down is through recruitment consultancies, and there are a number of consultancies out there that have specialist interim divisions, and again they can help to open appropriate doors for you by matching your particular skill sets with the tasks that any particular client organisation of theirs is looking for. So those would be the two routes. But personally, I found the networking and simply putting yourself out there and saying, you know, I'm available, this is what I'm good at, and I would love to help. And when that first opportunity comes along, grab it with both hands, jump in and just do the best possible job that you can.
Nick Wake, owner and founder of Awaken Communications, thank you very much for your time and telling us about interim management.
Thank you, Kieran. It's been an absolute pleasure.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.
Thank you for listening today. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. Don't forget to leave us a review and subscribe. That way you'll get the next podcast the very second it's ready. Coming up in the next few weeks, we will look at neuromarketing, business development in professional services, and data protection legislation. That's all coming up in the Cambridge Marketing Podcast.